You know, when you hear that killer track, it's time for one thing and one thing only, another episode of your favorite podcast. It is Hockey, the podcast, and a very special episode, although I say that for each and every one, because it's the last episode where we are in double figures, because the very next time you hear the show, we'll have reached the magical 100 mark. That's not to say that the other 99 or 98 before this one haven't been magical. They certainly have. But yeah, it's been an amazing journey with my partner in crime, Tyron Jabu Barnard, as we head towards the century. Ty, how you doing?
Derek, good evening to you. It is evening. You always say it's a special edition, and I always try and justify which greeting I use. I'm always like, good evening. It is evening, even though some people listen to it in the morning. And, you know, we have a lot of regular listeners are probably thinking, Tyron, just shut up and just say, how's it? So, how's it, Derek?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's been good to get the sleep back to normal after rather early mornings in Tokyo. Getting through a financial year and then my day job. But yeah, lots of great news popping out, lots of stories popping out, hockey creating so much content right now. And, you know, one of the things that we're doing is really spending a lot of time honoring some fantastic people who have served our country and our sport so well over the past decade or more. And that's exactly what we're going to do in episode 99. Is we are going to celebrate another fantastic hockey person.
Yeah, I mean, I keep on saying this, put us out of our misery, but of course, the people have logged on. They know exactly who it is because there's a massive poster, there's an entire blurb written about this person. But for those few that accidentally just clicked on the show and don't know what they're doing here, Ty, put us out of our misery.
Well, Derek, we have none other than Lisa Marie Detlefs. She is the fifth highest capped SA women's hockey player in history with 271 test caps. She has been to 3 Commonwealth Games, 3 Hockey World Cups, and of course now 3 Olympic Games. Should have been 4, but we won't get into that tonight. And she's joining us because people would have read, will be listening just after she's announced the news that it has been time to hang up that Osaka stick and give somebody else the opportunity to break strikers' hearts. And, of course, she's joining us now to talk about this decision, to talk about the highs, the lows, the memories of an incredible career. Lisa, welcome back to the show. I'm sure you're also a triple, well, you're actually probably more than a 3-time appearance person on Hockey the Podcast now. But we'll just, because you like the triples, triple Olympian, triple Commonwealth gamer, triple World Cup, and triple guest on Hockey the Podcast, Lisa Detlefs.
Hectic. Thanks, Tyron. Thanks, Derek, for having me. That's a bit of an introduction there. I won't lie, the palms are a bit sweaty after that one.
It was a total of four and a half minutes intro for our guest. But,
yes.
But worth it, though, Ty.
I mean, it was superb. I mean, we all know it's evening. We all know who's on. But yeah, Lisa, you've made the decision to hang up your stick, 271 caps. I mean, many people just dream about representing their country once. You did that and then did it 270 more times. I mean, it's frankly absolutely sensational what you've achieved in your career, how many times, the longevity of your career. You must look back at it now with a massive amount of pride.
No, definitely, Tyron. I think, like you said, I mean, this was a dream. What for me, let me do my maths quickly. 16 years ago that I said, okay, you know, I want to make the team and I want to try be there for as long as possible. So to be able to have been afforded that opportunity and that honor to represent my country for that many caps, really, yeah. I mean, I battled to even find the words to explain it, but I'm just very grateful and thankful.
And I mean, Lisa, over the journey, I mean, the one thing that would have been popping up now while you were in Tokyo is that the next 12 months are quite action-packed. I mean, you've got the Commonwealth Games, you've got the African Cup and the World Cup in the space of pretty much 10 months from now. Yeah. Was there an inkling in your heart to try and push it out and eke out one more major tournament at all?
I think, of course, that is in the back of the head. But I think, to be honest and completely frank, this past year was already that push for me. After the whole postponement of the Olympics and Corona and the impact it had on the fact that we couldn't play, it did have quite a mental effect on me, and also physical, because I'm not the spring chicken anymore. So my body stopped starting, actually, I think, put me more back than anything. So it was really hard work to keep going for the 12 months leading up to Tokyo. And I just thought, you know, if I can't give my 100%, it's not fair. So I think the decision was purely made on the fact that I just physically, even though I would love to do it physically, I just can't. I can't, and that wouldn't be fair, you know, to continue and stop someone else from being able to do a better job than me. So yeah, it was a tough decision, but I think the right one, definitely the right one.
Yeah, Lisa, congratulations on an absolutely stellar career. And you speak about the fact that it was one final push this year. I mean, how big a blow was that on your plans? I mean, was that always the idea to call it quits after the Olympics? And then when you realized that it was going to be extended by a year, and that hopefully, holding thumbs, that it was going to take place in 2021, you're like, shucks, is that still on the cards? I mean, was that always the planning, and how much did that disrupt your thinking?
Yeah, no, I think definitely for me, the plan was always to finish the 4-year cycle, and I was aiming to, you know, finish it at World Cup and Commonwealth. I always thought, okay, cool, with the Olympics in 2020, you can kind of, you always know that the year post that is a bit of a dip. So then the body can recoup and then pick it up again. And I just think, yeah, working the other way around just didn't work for me. And yeah, it poses another challenge. And I've been fortunate enough that, you know, in terms of planning, I would have always had that support still, you know, school being really supportive in letting me do what I need to do, my parents backing me. So it was never, that was never the reason as to why I couldn't. It was just physically, it was time to say, okay, the body can't do it anymore.
You say that, Lisa, but obviously, I mean, you've done that, you've been there, and I don't know if everybody knows this and if you're really willing to talk about it, but you almost didn't get the opportunity to go to Tokyo because you had a little bit of a scare with the COVID tests. I mean, when you first heard that you had tested positive, I mean, how did you react? How did you have the mental fortitude to even just overcome that?
Sure. Tyron, again, here come the sweaty palms. Yeah, I think for those that didn't know, I wasn't feeling too fresh about, what was it? We had the holding camp on the Saturday in Poch, and Tuesday we had a camp in Joburg, and I felt a bit of like sniffle. So I said to Rob, okay, cool. Should I just go for a testing case? Because of course I wouldn't want to be the reason to, you know, that there's an outbreak within the team. So it's like, yeah, go. And I'll never forget, I got that result and was positive, and I just went cold and I started crying, and I phoned Rob and everyone was crying. And I was like, what now? You know what? And actually, I think at that point, no one knew what to do because it didn't happen. And especially a week before we were supposed to fly. And then the next day I went for another test and came out negative. So I was like, okay, hold on, what's going on here? And then they were like, okay, well, you got to produce 2 negatives. So then the next day I go and I'm positive again. So I'm like, oh, sweet baby cheese. Now what, you know? And then I think then I got a negative results for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I was able to meet the team at the airport and fly. So I missed that whole camp. Wasn't allowed to be with the team. But yeah, mentally, to be honest, I don't think I ever overcame that. It was a huge roller coaster, especially the fact that it was positive, negative, positive. But I know a few of the men also experienced it. So shame, we kind of created a group of support between all of us. And I'm just so thankful to those guys as well in the men's team. Because, yeah, Rusty, Tim and Austin, shame, they were such champs in helping me through that. So, yeah, don't think I fully recovered, but definitely to a point where I was like, okay, you know, it's done. Can't, you know, change it. So I'm just going to have to try to put all the energy I have left in picking myself up and going to Tokyo.
Yeah, you mentioned Rusty, and it's interesting because we played a golf game about what was the time, about a month before Tokyo 2020. And and so we had a golf tournament. We had arranged it about amongst 16 friends, including Rassi. And, you know, he came there and he was fantastic. He made it through to the final of our little tournament. But, you know, he didn't want to shake anyone's hands, and he was fist pumping everyone. Mm-hmm. And he was making sure that he kept social distancing at an absolute premium. And, you know, I look back and I think it's astounding. I mean, you almost want to wrap yourself in cotton wool, surely, before things like that happen. Because, I mean, it can ruin – I mean, you're a veteran of two other Olympic Games, so of course you want to make it your third. But, I mean, imagine someone who would be doing it for the first time and it gets taken away from them by virtue of the fact that they caught it by someone who was being silly or just went out there and didn't really care if other people got it. And I can't imagine – how tough that must be as a human being, because, I mean, of course, myself and Ty are careful, but because if we get it, we get it, and that's that. It's a whole different world for yourself and for the other Olympians, or future Olympians. I mean, I just can't imagine that feeling, how careful you have to be around everyone, everything, and just make sure that you can get on that plane and you can finally go, phew, okay, I've made it. Now I can kind of breathe a sigh of relief.
No, for sure. And I think, Derek, the thing that got me the most was, as I'm a paranoid person by nature, and that just heightened everything. And I mean, you were stepping on glass, like, you know, you didn't know, you weren't allowed to see anyone. I mean, I even went to my principal and I was like, listen, can I please, you know, we were starting to head into the third wave. And I was like, can I please get off school? Because I feel like I'm sitting in an area where it's waiting to happen, you know? So they were like, of course, go home, isolate. So I was literally at home or at Saints training, at home or at Saints training. And then, like you say, just it happens. And then you're like, now what? And I battled to even describe it, because for me, I mean, I spoke to my mom and I was like, you know what, if it is and it is positive, then I've been very fortunate to go to two. So I've got to just hold on to that and be grateful. But yeah, I wouldn't be able to like fathom how it would feel for a first time Olympian. It actually happened to one of my friends in the water polo team, the captain, and I was absolutely shattered, Shame. And we were speaking, like, because she also tested positive, but then Shame remained positive and actually had to withdraw. And it's just, it was heartbreaking because, you know, it's like you said, it's the first time, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, and you don't know if you're going to get it again.
Yeah, I don't know how scary that must be. And to get that result saying that you are positive, and congratulations for remaining positive in terms of your outlook and overcoming what could have been an absolutely potential disaster. Well, it was regardless, but you managed to overcome it. Tell us, with regards to your retirement, is it purely on the international stage, or are you saying goodbye to the provincial side of things too?
It's a bit of a tricky one. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it's... For me, it's international. I did have a bit of a wobble where I was like, no, I need to get away completely. And, you know, like, just step away. And then 2 days later, again, I was like, oh my gosh, no, I'll like become depressed. So I've definitely stepped away from the international scene. Provincial, I will not be playing that this year. I might play a few club games, but I think I need to recoup physically and mentally, and just take a little bit of a time out to just gather my thoughts, try to figure out what I'm going to do for the future. Because I think that's been the most nerve-wracking thing with all of this is I work at a school, but I just, in terms of hockey, it has been my life for the past, 14, 15 years. So I just need to figure that out first before I think jump back into it. But I mean, I definitely want to coach still, so I'll stay in the hockey world. I don't think I'll be able to leave that permanently.
Lisa, obviously, before we look forward at what you've got planned for the future, because there'll be plans, we can look back at your career and obviously 3 Olympic Games, 3 Commonwealth Games, 3 World Cups. You are an Olympic goal scorer, which was pretty cool when I was putting those lists together. But what stands out, and it's unfair to ask someone who's had 271 caps to pick one memory, So without giving you a finite number, what are some of the best moments that stand out over your career?
I think without like sounding cliche, definitely my first cap. I was called up in very weird circumstances as well from the USIS team when we still had that. So that would definitely be the number one playing my first cap in Stallies. And then I think stepping out into the stadium in Beijing was, sure, I still get the chills thinking about that. I never thought I'd ever get there. And yeah, that just being on the biggest stage, Shelley Russell and I were the youngsters, so we were like absolutely gobsmacked by everything. So that one. And then I think a more recent one would be our win against the US at World League in 2017. That was a very, very special moment for our team, and also one that, yeah, it was a remarkable match. So I think that those are the ones that stand out really, if I can think off the top of my head.
Yeah, that was the Candace Manuel match, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
You know, for all the hockey fans, you'll remember that Candace was the one that scored. And obviously that was the game that qualified you for the World Cup, because it meant you went into the top five, I think it was, or sixth or fifth or whatever it was. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the girls have quite a tough time over the next year. And what we've seen is a lot of a lot of inexperience now in the team. A lot of the experienced players have moved on. The Giles Bonnet era, I mean, it was really you and just one or two others that were from that era and still there. How important do you think it is that we try and get some of those experienced players involved in the squad from a coaching and management point of view?
No, I think it is exceptionally important. I think, you know, we've always said that we know, and I don't want to use it, it's not a crutch. We're not fortunate enough to play as many games as the other nations. And I think, you know, if we can leech on that experience that we've had from past players, why not? And I always believe you can add value after playing, you know, and pass that down. And yes, we've got maybe, as you say, an inexperienced team, but it's always going to happen. We know that that's going to normally happen after an Olympic cycle. So I just think, yeah, we need to find other avenues of how we can accelerate that, can you use progress? I don't even know what the word is. You know, for the team going forward till next year, because it's a massive year. We know that World Cup's massive. We know that Commonwealth is massive. And yeah, I know personally, I would love to be involved and try help wherever I can. And I know there'll be many other players around the country that, wherever we can help, we want to help, because we know that it isn't always the easiest road, you know, for the team. So, yeah.
And it doesn't matter how long I do this, there will always be a time in a call that I start talking with my mute button still pushed. But I mean, Lisa, if we go over your career, right, at the early days, you started, and I mean, you and I know this, that you looked up towards the likes of Lindsay Wright. Were there other players over your careers? And obviously she wasn't right back then. She wasn't wrong either. Oh, wow, that was bad. she was Lindsay Carlisle. Lindsay, I know you listen, so I'm sorry. That was terrible. But yeah, I mean, were there other players that you looked up to or played a big role in developing you into the great player you became?
Yeah, I think Lindsay, for me, definitely was, in the beginning of my career, an idol. I mean, she used to coach me at hockey at Ramberg. And I always said, Mom, that's who I'm going to be. And I want to play along Lindsay, you know. And then, unfortunately, she retired in 2006, if I'm not mistaken. And I only made the team in 2007. But then, of course, I mean, I made the team where the likes of Marsh were in there. Okay, Peter didn't come back yet. You know, Kathleen Taylor, Jen Wilson, Shanae Bailey, and they were all my idols. But I think if I look at it over the years, the person that had the biggest impact in the team for me was definitely Marsha and Marcel Keat. I think Marsha, one of the most phenomenal captains that I've ever played under, and there's just something about her that I spoke the other day about it. It's just you don't want to ever let her down, you know, and that brought a different dynamic out of you as a player. And you were like, okay, I'm always going to strive to be better. And she had a way of like getting that out of you without demanding it or like, you know, like shaking it out of you. You just wanted to do it for her. And she had a massive impact on my career. And then Marcel Keat, of course, I mean, you know, she's the most phenomenal person out. And shame, she's been there with me in a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And I owe so much to her too. So I think those would be the two that had the biggest impact on me throughout my career.
And I mean, obviously, as a defender, you built lots of defensive partnerships over the years. Was there anyone particularly that you just loved playing alongside?
Sure, that's.
And I mean, I call you a defender, but you will. I know you could play in the middle as well, but we categorize you as a defender.
I think Kate Hector, or you know, Kate Woods now. She also was phenomenal to play alongside. I played with Cindy also for a while, Cindy Brown. Marsh and I played a while together as well, which was awesome because, I mean, we played for SA and also alongside each other for Southern. So I think that relationship was the strongest or the longest, should I say. Are you talking specifically in the middle? Because this is putting me on the spot, Tyron, but... Yeah, I mean,
you pick because it's your interview. Whatever works for you, so you can dictate.
It's tricky because I think everyone I've played alongside has been awesome. I think the standout for me would be Kate Marshan and also T. Bright. I think in the middle.
Just on that subject of captaincy, you speak about Marsha and how amazing she was to play under. And it's interesting because I've spoken to so many sportsmen and ladies, and when we speak about captains, it's pretty much the same theme where they mention it's the ones that lead by example, not by words. And they certainly can have a very inspirational speech that they use, but more often than not, it's they do through actions. And Marsha certainly struck me as someone who did exactly that. Am I correct that you captained on the odd occasion South Africa, or am I wrong?
No, there was one match in 2010 where Giles had just come into the system and we were in China on a tour, and the captaincy was rotating a little bit, and like Leslie and George captained a little bit because I don't think Marsha was there for the whole period. And then, yeah, they gave me a go once, but no, for me, I was not the right fit for that group of players, or I think I wouldn't have been able to cope, to be honest.
Well, I was actually going to ask that, because was it something that you ever aspired to achieve? I mean, you've got captaincy experience when it comes to provincial level with the Madikwe Rangers, but on a national level, rather someone else carry that on that.
Yeah, and I think... Exactly that. And I mean, we did personality traits where, you know, we always categorize us according to colors, and Marshy was a blue through and through, which was rational. And I think I'm too emotional for that level. It was something that I never, of course it would be cool, but I know that I wouldn't be the best person for the job at that level. So I was pretty happy with that, and less pressure. And then I just had to focus on my game and make sure I gave my best for the team, you know?
Yeah, I remember we actually had this discussion when one of your many appearances on the show, and we spoke about that personality trait, and it really caught my attention, because I'd love to know, and we're probably flogging a dead horse, but it's worth repeating, what was all in that personality test? I mean, I don't expect you to remember it word for word, but it's quite interesting. It was, okay, cool, well, we're going to select our captain. Here's a test to prove it.
Yeah, it was quite funny. We focus a lot on it in the Giles era, and we are categorized into four colors, if I'm not mistaken. So it was green, blue, purple, and red. So the reds were like, they don't necessarily think it through. They just go and they react. And then you get the purples that, you know, are all happy and bubbly. And that was Marcel, she's going to kill me. And then the rational thinkers like Amasha, blue. where they'll, you know, everything will be well thought out and all of that jazz. And then the Greens, which is a few of us, which we, the emotional, we overthink. And it actually generally landed up being as all the defenders. So it was quite a cool activity to do. But yeah, it was lots of fun when we did realize who was who, because it was spot on, you know, throughout the squad.
Derek, I have some news. Is, you know, you mentioned a certain somebody there, Lise. So why don't we ask that somebody for their input?
Lisa Dietlifs, what an absolute champion. I am so proud of you. You're an inspiration and a role model to so many hockey players in South Africa. You have had the most incredible career, and it is inspiring to all of us, old players, new players, and I wish you all the best for your retirement. And I know that you are going to be absolutely amazing in your new journey ahead. And just know that you have so much support with you in the hockey community, as well as your friends and your teammates. And I am super proud of everything you've accomplished, and you should be super proud with it too. Wishing you all the best, Lise, and congratulations on an absolutely incredible and great career. Lots of love, Kiwi.
Thanks, Tyron.
don't worry. You know, we like to make things special for people. I'll talk a bit so you have a chance to grab a sip of water. But I mean, you speak about Marcel and Lisa, no matter where I've gone over the years, I mean, it's been, sure, 11 years for me of covering hockey in South Africa. You have never shied away from being willing and helpful and available and giving information. I mean, I think you probably took an unfair amount of press duty over the years. You faced up, you had a peer for things, and you were always a great ambassador. And you know, hearing someone like Marcel talk like that about you, hearing someone like, you know, there's a few others that speak so highly of you. I mean, again, I know I said it at the start, but it really must hit home how impactful your presence in the hockey community was.
Sure. Sorry, I'm just trying to gather myself a little bit. But yeah, I always said, like Tara and I, I've never done this for myself. I've always wanted to do it for the team, for, you know, for the younger players, and trying to create a legacy and trying to create a platform that we can just continue to grow and get better, you know, as SA Women's Hockey. So I hope I've made an impact. I know hasn't always been, you know, the best in terms of me playing. I know that. And I just hope that, yeah, I hope that I've made an impact or inspired someone in some way or another to play this beautiful game and to want to represent your country, you know. Yeah, I'm battling to find the words, to be honest.
Okay, let's go into a happy note. Of course, I mean, it's all been happy, but yeah, no doubt it's been very emotional. But I always do ask this, and I probably have asked you it already. I forget, but let's, maybe you've added some more to the list. Who knows, maybe Tokyo cracks the nod. But obviously we are massive traveling fundies, and unfortunately we've been robbed of travel over the last year and a bit. I'm lucky, I'm off to Namibia in a couple of days' time though, so that's quite cool. But your top five destinations where hockey took you to, I'd love to know, Lise.
Sure. I think Tokyo was awesome. I think I loved Argentina. Fortunate enough to go to Australia. I would even say Hong Kong was quite cool before Beijing. We went to Hong Kong. And I'm trying to think of the next one. Kenya was actually pretty fun, to be honest, for Africa Cup. So I would say those for me.
You know, I always bring this up with Argentina. It's a country I've spent quite a lot of time in. Absolutely love it. And I'm always amazed at how similar it is to South Africa in certain ways. The people, yeah. but particularly when it comes to the food and the wine.
Well, I wouldn't know about the wine, but the food definitely. But the only problem for me was eating those steaks at like 10 o'clock at night. Mm. That for me, was a bit hectic.
Yeah, because
so you're retiring. You can tell the secrets now. You don't have to hide them.
I still have. I can't. Wine and me, I still can't. I'm sorry.
That makes you the odd one out from the Crusaders Hockey Club.
I know, right? It's okay.
And I mean, Lisa, talking about wine, talking about Crusaders, club hockey is a great place for a fine session. Who's been the best fines masters you've had over the years?
I would say the best one was actually the older MacDade. I can't remember his name now. I'm sorry. I feel so bad. But he was fines master for us when we played USA in 2006, when it was still a bit of a party before it turned quite serious. He was phenomenal. And then I would say, it's a bit of a difficult one. Cole Moulton as well. For old when we were at Riverside, he was quite hilarious. I would say those two, yeah.
And I mean, over the years, best roommate that you've had to share with?
Sure.
Yeah, this is a tough one because yeah. I love all my roommates when we go on tour, just as long as it's not Derek, because otherwise I don't get to go to sleep.
Well, to be honest, they chopped and changed for quite a while. And then when it became set in stone, I would say Ilda Davids. Ilda and I, yeah, we had a lot of fun times together. I would say Ilda.
All right. And if you were going on a tour, which player was the most addicted to their cell phones?
Lillian Du Plessis.
That's fair. It's almost as quick as everyone answers with Tyson Lungwana.
But she has gotten better, I will say. She has definitely gotten better.
Look, I remember in the earlier years, you used to, if you wanted an update on what was going on, we just made sure we were following Lillian's social media.
Yeah.
All right.
I think Nicole Wallraven's actually taken over now, to be honest.
Yeah, Nicole is a fairly well-updated person. A cool story about her being a fourth-generation Olympian.
Very cool.
The four different sports is, I think, what made it really cool. But, Anissa, over the years, you've obviously played with a whole bunch of teammates. But I thought to do something a little bit different, let's pick, because, you are the, okay, no, wait, I'll hold this statement back a little bit. Let's pick the class clown five. Who are the five biggest class clowns you've had in your squads over the years? And it can be national, provincial, wherever you're comfortable.
Okay, I'll take Jen Wilson, Marcel Keat, Nicolene, to Blanche, I would say Bernie Costin. And I would even say Tonela Polo.
Yeah, I mean, Polo's still a class clown right now. Even when she was on the podcast during Tokyo, she was an absolute clown. And I have an important question is, who do you believe can replace you as the hockey head girl?
Hockey girl, oh my gosh.
Yes, that question came from Marsha Cox.
I can imagine, damn it, Marsha. Sure. Let me think about it. I think Robs Johnson is quite close. I would say Robin Johnson.
I'm just letting that sink in because I know Robs will listen every now and again. Lisa, obviously you've had a great partnership with Osaka over the years. Ricky and Miguel and the guys behind Osaka, they did a fantastic job. What other partners and sponsors have you had that, I know you're a big sponsor for Sports Tape, but this is your opportunity to give them some love.
Yeah, no, I think, I was very fortunate to be granted a sponsorship when I was quite young with Griffin. And I was with them for a good, I'd say, 6-7 years as well. So yeah, very thankful to them. And also then after that was Adidas, which I was also, you know, I was with them for 6 years. And of course, you know, we know that their gear and everything's phenomenal too. So huge thank you to them. And then, yeah, soccer. I mean, I'm actually meeting with Ricky tomorrow. I just said to him, you know, this is what's going to happen, but, you know, I need to just come and thank you and have a meeting with you. So I'll go and chat to them tomorrow. But yeah, I honestly could never have asked for a better sponsor. I know we tried, I think we tried in 2013, but it didn't work out in terms of my past contract. So then I eventually signed with them in 2015. And I mean, I've been so happy and honored to, you know, been given, you know, their backing for so many years. So I owe him and Miguel so much. And then, yeah, like you say, this is the tape. I had a sponsor for Mueller because I was using quite a bit of tape. So I'm very grateful to them as well for giving me a load of tape over the past few years.
Lisa, as we wrap up, and I mean, this is going to be a very loaded question, but the first thing that pops into your head, tell us one overriding memory or story that sticks out from your South African hockey career that you will forever cherish.
Sure. I've actually hit a blank because there's so many. sure, that's a hard one. You know what? I think it's my first tournament in Stellenbosch, and Marcia said that she wanted to room with me. And I'll never forget before playing that first match, because it was a toss-up if I was going to play or not. I was supposed to just be there to train. And she just turned around to me and she said, you know what, Lisa, it's just another game of hockey. Don't make it more than what it is. And I think that's something that stuck with me. I even said to some of the kids I coach now, you know, and I think that for me is a very powerful memory that will stick out, I think, like a sore thumb. I know it's not playing wise, but yeah, that's something that I think I'll never ever forget.
So, I mean, Marcia has been a massive impact on you. And Marcia, of course, sent us a little note for you as well. So I'm going to play it. This is Lisa. What I'm going to do is I'm going to say, Lisa, thank you for everything. Thank you for an amazing decade of just over a decade of service. Thank you for always being such a willing helper, willing voice, such a good friend to Hockey the Magazine, Hockey the Podcast, and in our previous incarnations as Hockey 24/7 and All Things W. It has been an absolute honor, not just watching you play, but calling you a friend. And I obviously look forward to still seeing you play when I go watch Belgatex Elite and when I go watch IPT and getting you on board so us hockey nerds can have a chat. We're going to finish the interview with the Marcia chat so that I don't force you to respond to it. But all we can say from Hockey the Podcast is thank you.
Thank you. And Tyron, to you and Derek, thank you so much for everything. And yeah, like you said, it's been quite a few years and just really appreciate, you know, the fact that you guys did get involved with hockey and continue to do such wonderful things for our sport. So thank you so much for all you do and continue to do it. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. That is Lisa Dietlis. And to close it out, here is Marcia Cox.
Hey, Lisa. It's Marcia here. Just want to say congratulations on an incredible career for South African women's hockey. Your dedication, your commitment, your relentless drive and fight is something that everybody has always admired and perhaps never told you enough how much it actually meant to the team and how much it means to players of the future as well. You always set the standard high, and I think that a lot of players and a lot of spectators will miss seeing you on the field. Wow, it's kind of hard to picture the team without you, but I wish you all the success for the next chapter in your life. I think that you will make a success of anything that you do. And I know that the little kids that are lucky to be coached by you will cherish everything, every lesson that they can learn from you. And know that it comes from a place of incredible experience and just pure passion. And yeah, I think we'll have a good laugh at all the strapping that will no longer need to be used. I think that yeah, you will not miss strapping your body up. I don't know what you'll miss more, or what you won't miss more, should I say, the strapping or the ice baths. But yeah, congratulations again, Lisa. You've been an incredible player and person for the South African women's hockey team, and I know that you will be missed dearly, but we wish you all the best and welcome to the life of retirement. Yeah, lots of love, Marsha.
We got to get a comment, Lise. How are you feeling?
Oh, the tears are streaming down the face. Shame. Yeah, what a champ. Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
as are you, Lisa Dietlefs. Congratulations on an absolutely stellar career. Thanks for joining us again on Hockey the Podcast. It won't be the last time, just because you're saying farewell to the international arena. We'll have you on plenty more. You can take those appearances into double figures in the near future. But yeah, well done on a magnificent international career. And yeah, enjoy international retirement, as you heard Marsha say. It's actually a lot of fun. And yeah, congratulations once again. Three-time Olympian, three-time Commonwealth Games attendee. And the list just goes on and on and on. You can be immensely proud of what you've achieved in close to almost two decades of international hockey. And there's absolutely no doubt in our minds that you'll go on to achieve even bigger and better things in your international retirement. Thanks so much, Lise. Cheers.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you. And thanks, Tyrone.